Today on Planet Money, the second part of our story on Marxism and capitalism in Chile. In part one, we told you how Chile democratically elected President Salvador Allende, a socialist. Now, part two, the coup. And please note, there is a lot of violence in today's episode. September 11th, 1973.
I remember clearly the airplanes flying above our house.
This is Carola Fuentes, a documentary filmmaker who was 3 years old the day the coup started.
A little before 7 a.m., President Salvador Allende gets a call. The Chilean Navy has rebelled in the port city of Valparaíso. He rushes downtown to La Moneda, the presidential palace. Tanks and troops fill the streets. Allende gets on the radio and talks to his country. He says, "Workers of my country, I have faith in Chile and its destiny."
The military tells Allende, surrender. He refuses. Tanks open fire on the palace. Allende asks that the women be allowed to leave, and they are. Then the bombardment starts.
Fighter jets send rockets into the palace, and inside, fires break out. By afternoon, Allende realizes there's no way out. He shoots himself in the head.
Back out in the streets, the army rounds up Allende's supporters. Juan Gabriel Valdez, who's now a professor at Columbia University, was studying at Princeton that day. He gets a panicked phone call from his father.
I thought it was an exaggeration at the beginning. I considered the possibility that they were exaggerating. For instance, the fact that there were people floating in the river.
It's a nightmare. Allende's supporters are beaten and shot in the streets. Thousands are herded into stadiums.
One of them is Victor Jara, the Chilean Woody Guthrie. Soldiers break Jara's fingers and tell him, "You'll never play the guitar again." An officer plays Russian roulette with him. He loads a bullet into a gun, spins the chamber, pulls the trigger until it's over. Then they shoot his body more than 40 times and dump him in a street in Santiago.
And the Chicago Boys, those Chilean economists who studied at the University of Chicago, they're watching. Two of them get in a car, drive to the top of a hill, and watch the bombing.
Chicago boy Rolf Luders is living in Washington, D.C. Remember, he was the one who had Milton Friedman as his thesis advisor. He got a call too, but his reaction wasn't fear or confusion.
Immediately, it became evident it was a military coup which took place, managed by people who sought a democracy and free market.
The contradiction, the difficult contradiction, is that Chile was a democracy before the coup. And if there's one thing a coup is not democratic. So people may have wanted free markets and democracy, but what happened instead was, in fact, an authoritarian government.
No, this is true.
In Chile, democratic elections led directly to a socialist government.
And then the military took over by force in the name of the free market.
Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Jasmine Garst.
And I'm Noel King. In the United States during the Cold War, we believed that democracy and free markets went hand in hand. But then there was what happened in Chile. Today on the show, Chile goes from socialism to capitalism by force and with the help of the United States. It's the story of a coup, a ruthless dictator, and a bunch of economists. The Chicago Boys.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Simply Safe Home Security, who believes fear has no place in a place like home. That's why they made a completely wireless home security system that can be self-installed in under an hour. Simply Safe's sensors are built to protect every point of access to your home, including doors, windows, and garage. More than 3 million people have already protected their home with Simply Safe. Get free shipping and a 60-day money-back guarantee at simplysafe.com/planetmoney.
Hey, it's Kenny Malone from Planet Money, the podcast you're listening to right now with your ears because we are a podcast. However, We are also occasionally a video series, and we have a brand new season of Planet Money Shorts out right now that covers everything from the tooth fairy and tooth inflation to the man who invented expensive vodka and convinced us all it was worth paying for. I am in that vodka episode. I grew a beard for it, and I shaved my beard for it. If you'd like to see that, it is at npr.org/planetmoneyshorts. That's npr.org/planetmoneyshorts.
So overnight, Chile has gone from democracy to military rule.
And now the economy, the inflation, the shortages, the crushing deficit, all of that is the military's problem. Or more specifically, the general who takes charge, Augusto Pinochet. He's infamous now for his brutality, but back then he was an unknown. He had no governing experience.
And certainly no economics experience, says Rolf Luders.
I saw you quoted once as saying, when it came to economics, Pinochet was an idiot. He didn't know anything.
Right. He didn't. I didn't say idiot, I think, because I usually don't use that expression. But he didn't know anything about economics, right? Sure. No, definitely.
Look, this makes sense. Pinochet went to military school as a teenager. He's a lifelong soldier. He's not an economist.
But this is not a problem, because there are these University of Chicago-trained economists already living in Santiago, and a small group of them has drafted a plan to fix the economy, and the military has the plan.
The ladrillo and...
The brick.
Yeah, the brick. And so he decided to appoint Chicago boys to the key economic ministries.
In the days after the coup, the experimenting in free markets begins. Just a little at first. The military busts up some unions, they crack down on the black market, and they unfix the price of food.
Unfixing the prices is sound economic logic. Price fixing had been causing shortages. But if food producers can charge the prices they want, they will produce food. So they do, and the price of food goes through the roof. And for 18 months, it kind of just goes like this. It's economic tinkering. But Chile's big problem is inflation, chronic, dizzying inflation. It's running at over 300%.
And you know who knows a lot about inflation? Rolf Luders. And his old thesis advisor, a guy who's made his reputation on monetary policy and fixing inflation.
Is it true that in 75, you personally invited Milton Friedman to come to Chile?
Yes. We probably invited him in 74, but he came to Chile in 75.
By now, Friedman is a superstar. He is an evangelist with one simple message. Free markets lead to free societies.
He meets with Pinochet in a conference center, and there's a picture of this meeting that I've spent a lot of time looking at. In it, Pinochet is sitting in an armchair with his legs crossed, leaning toward Friedman and looking apprehensive. And Friedman is leaning back, legs also crossed, and he has this self-satisfied look on his face.
And Pinochet received him, thanked him, and asked him what he thought about the economy and so on. And Friedman talked basically about the need of a shock treatment in macroeconomic terms.
A shock treatment. Shock treatment meaning you change fast and you change dramatically.
The example Friedman always used is, you see, it hurts less to cut the tail of a dog if you cut it at once than if you cut it in slices.
Ah.
Yeah? Okay. And
Did Friedman say that to Pinochet?
Well, he did it to Pinochet too, and he did it to everybody. And he's right.
About a month after that meeting, the government announces the shock treatment is about to begin.
Step one, austerity. Cut government spending, including subsidies for poor people. Step two, tighten monetary policy. Stop printing money. It's painful. Taxes are raised. Government jobs are cut. Unemployment spikes. The middle class and the poor are reeling.
Step three, open the economy to the rest of the world. Chile has had these insanely high import tariffs protecting their industries from competition. So, for example, the country has 17 car companies that combined make 17,000 cars a year. It's totally inefficient. Now, the Chicago boys cut the tariffs, and all of these foreign-made cars come pouring in. Columbia professor Juan Gabriel Valdez says because of this move, a lot of people lose their jobs.
The whole Chilean industrial sector broke in a matter of 2 months, and the level of unemployment was brutal.
Valdez noticed early on all of these Chicago boys being hired into the government. He wrote a book about it years ago, and he interviewed a professor who taught the Chicago boys. And this subject came up, the subject of how, like, overnight, they cut the tariffs that were protecting Chilean industry.
And he used a very American word to describe what it meant to do that.
What was the word?
You have to be a cold-blooded son of a bitch to do that.
But cutting the tariffs did change the country, especially if you had money. If you have money, now you can buy whatever you want from wherever you want.
Patricia Arancibia Clavel, a historian who's written a bunch about the Chicago boys, remembers how quickly things changed.
En vez de ver una zapatería o una óptica o una farmacia,
instead of one eyeglasses shop, one shoe store, you can find a lot of them.
Este zapato rojo, verde, azul.
And there was not only the one red shoe that you could buy, you could find blue shoes, green shoes.
Chilean journalist Jonas Romero was translating for me. This all happened before he was born, so he was listening and he was getting kind of amped.
And this led to an economic competition, so the shoe that costed 1,000 pesos now costed 500 pesos.
She says all of this starts a revolution in the way people think. Before, you'd graduate from college and then you'd go work for a state-owned company. You didn't think about profits or competition, but the Chicago boys are privatizing everything. Whole industries are moving into private hands.
Chile's government does hold on to the copper industry, though. It's the biggest business in Chile. Some things are just too valuable to put on the free market.
Yeah, I guess so. Aside from the copper industry, the U.S. is over the moon about this. Richard Nixon even says he'll take a dictatorship as long as it's not a communist dictatorship.
When they are dictatorial, I would say they are dictatorial. I would also have to, on the other side, indicate that they are non-communist.
The Chicago boys changed the laws to make it easier to invest in Chile, so U.S. companies come in. Everything from banks to oil companies to General Motors, which had left under Allende. Billions of dollars in foreign investment and loans come pouring in.
The economy starts growing, and people start rhapsodizing about Chile's economic miracle.
Chilean public TV starts broadcasting Milton Friedman's TV show. It's called Free to Choose.
Now, like some people here, you may be appalled by his ideas. Like others, extremely enthusiastic about them. Whichever way it goes, I think you'll be fascinated by what Milton Friedman has to say.
Carlos Lafuentes was a kid back then.
This is amazing, you know? An economic TV show from an economist from the US being aired every week in the public TV station.
And on the TV soap operas, the actresses talk about how their Chilean appliances are junk and the foreign-made ones are so much better.
So the Chileans were consuming like mad because they felt that they were rich, because their income was going to grow.
Yeah. Because of the reforms that had been implemented.
Exactly.
Okay, but they're not rich. They're just optimistic. And there's a big difference between those two. In the early 1980s, there's a worldwide recession. And guess what? Chile's part of the world now. They have a recession too.
And this is when, in the middle of the night, Rolf Luders gets the call. He's being officially invited to come and work for Pinochet. Did you find Pinochet to be a frightening person?
No. Mm-mm. No. He used to say dicta blanda, you see. He said, you know, dicta blanda, blanda means soft. Dicta means dictator, right? And so he said he was a soft dictator. My personal experience was that he was actually more weak than strong.
This is hard to understand, but I'm going to give it a shot. Juan Gabriel Valdez told me that a couple years after the coup, he was interviewing guys from the Chilean military. And some of them told him, "We did not agree with the shock treatment. We could see that these policies were hurting people, But when we questioned the Chicago boys, they'd start using this Chicago speak. They were smarter than us. They talked over our heads.
We had no idea of what they were doing. And if we asked and we debated and we mentioned the consequences these things might have, we were rejected in a very drastic way. And, we couldn't answer. We couldn't react.
The economists made the generals feel like dummies.
Absolutely.
And so the generals were like, do what you want.
Exactly.
So clearly, Luders is not afraid of Pinochet. Now he is Minister of Economics and Finance, and he does something that seems like it would make Milton Friedman go crazy. He intervenes. The government bails out the banks.
The irony of this is not lost on Chileans. A New York Times article from back then reports that people started cracking jokes, calling this the Chicago Road to Socialism. Luders also renegotiates foreign debt. He changes the labor laws so that wages can be cut. He does a bunch of things.
It takes some time, but Chile's economy recovers. Remember, these free market policies were supposed to hurt at first, but work in the long run. And they did.
The economy stabilizes. And then it starts to thrive. Other countries call the Chicago boys in to consult. Today, Chile is one of the strongest economies in Latin America. But here is a question that Chileans ask themselves all the time. Was it worth it? Imagine this happening in the United States.
A president shocks our economy. Cheap imports come in, people lose jobs, the government slashes the social safety net. Your kid's college, it goes private, and it's going to cost you. But the president says, you know what? It's going to be better for you in the long run. We would vote that president out of office.
Augusto Pinochet could not be voted out. He was a dictator. If you protested him or protested his policies, you could be killed or tortured, or you'd just vanish. It was one of those situations where it felt like everyone knew someone or knew someone who knew someone.
It was very concrete.
That's Juan Gabriel Valdez.
So and so whom you know has been shot. So and so whom you know has disappeared. This is the type of things that happened. So and so who was your friend and was working at a copper mine as a manager was tortured in such a way that you couldn't, that they couldn't recuperate him. Therefore, they decided to shoot him.
I'm sorry, is that a real story?
Yeah, yeah.
That happened to someone you know?
It was Eugenio Ruiz Tagle, yes.
Say that again, his name was?
Eugenio Ruiz Tagle.
That's true. Now, here's what Ralph Luders believes to be true.
Under the conditions we had in Chile then, we either were going to move towards a totalitarian state or we would move under an authoritarian regime to a first free market economy, eventually to a democracy.
You had one of two choices. There was no third way. There was no...
You see, of course, who would not have been in favor of having a democratic change towards a free market economy? Everybody would have liked that. But that was not in the cards because nobody believed that could be done, you see. You follow me? The ideology was one that you needed government intervention in the economy and so on. So this other alternative, which I like, of course I like, but it wasn't viable. People forget the facts, you see, and the facts are that.
He says Pinochet told him once the economic experiment succeeded, Chile would go back to being a democracy.
Pinochet was absolutely convinced that what eventually should prevail is a democracy with a social...
He was, really? Pinochet really...
Of course, he wanted a social market economy. He
believed him?
I believed him.
After the break, Pinochet takes a huge gamble and loses.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Capital One's business credit card, the Spark Cash Card, offering unlimited 2% cash back on everything you buy for your business. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Visit CapitalOne.com for more information.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, and on the latest episode of How I Built This, how Alice Waters pioneered the farm-to-table movement and revolutionized American cuisine along the way. Check it out on How I Built This. from NPR.
In 1988, under pressure, Pinochet followed the Constitution and allowed Chileans to vote. Did they want him to stay or go? The economy was so strong by this point that he actually campaigned on it. They voted him out anyway.
A couple of years later, Pinochet handed over power to a democratically elected president. He died in 2006, facing charges of murder, torture, and kidnapping.
Some of the soldiers who tortured and killed the folk singer Victor Jara went to prison. The officer who allegedly played Russian roulette with him did not. He moved to Florida and avoided a criminal trial. A jury there found him liable in a civil suit.
Milton Friedman won the Nobel Prize for Economics. That visit to Chile would dog him for the rest of his life.
Rolf Luders doesn't mention any regrets. He's a public figure, and every once in a while, someone will say something nasty to him or about him on the subway or in a movie theater about how he worked for Pinochet.
I actually don't care much about it.
I
continue to go to the movies and the theaters, and I don't care. I have hundreds or thousands of people who greet me on the street still.
To him, the numbers prove the point. Chile's inflation, that chronic, seemingly unfixable problem, today it's stable and low. Its median income is one of the highest in South America. Its poverty rate, one of the lowest.
Patricia Clavel, the historian, was maybe the most forthcoming person I talked to in Santiago. And she said something I feel like other people were dancing around. Some people, her words, say that it was easier to open the economy in a country ruled by the military. And she said, whether you like it or not, we owe our economic success to Pinochet. Now, the interpreter Jonas had whatever is the opposite of a poker face. And when she said that, his face went dark.
Can I ask what you think about that? I mean, now you've heard this story. You know Pinochet. How old are you?
I'm 26.
Do you, so you are raised in the era of democracy?
Yes, I was born in
democracy. Do you think this is a fair argument? That if they wanted to make the economy better, they needed a military junta?
I think it has a lot of gray areas, because of course now I grew up in a country where my parents could buy food. I never had to make a queue for bread, for milk, for basic stuff. But I personally regret some of these things, because it was for me a very violent way to do it. It's huge, the amount of people who get tortured, who were disappeared, who were killed, who were tortured, and they were horrible. And it was.
Eddie, can you tell her what you're saying and ask her? Does she?
No, yo ya te entendí todo lo que dijiste.
You understood everything.
Yes, I understand. El tema de la violación de los derechos humanos.
She tells him no one can ever justify the violations of human rights. There are black spots in human nature, but we have to understand that and look for the good and the truth.
Are you convinced by this?
It's very hard for me to embrace that, given the recent past of my family and.
What happened to your family?
My mother always told me the story about her best friend when she was young. My mother protested against Pinochet, and her best friend one day went missing. And when she showed up months later, after my mom looked for her, she told her that she had...
What they did to her was a brutal method of torture, which we're not going to hear.
And it's such a confusing way, it's such a confusing country. And I think, you said it, it's a revolution, but it's a revolution that, for me, it was born with violence. Chile was the world laboratory for capitalism, for free market, for wherever you want to put it. That is a very strong thing to realize. This country, my family's country, was the laboratory for the rest of the world, for some people who went to Chicago and learned stuff that they thought it would be right. And it's a pain that I don't think we can make it go away.
You don't think it was worth it. For you, it's not worth it.
No, it wasn't worth it.
So you know how Jonas was listing the things that he never had to wait in line for, bread and milk? Patricia was prodding him along, and at one point she said, university. And he said to her, I owe a lot of debt to the university. This is what Chile is like today. A generation wins the Great War against Marxism, and they say to the young people, we did this for you. And some of these young people say back, yeah, but we wish you hadn't. I imagine these economists, the Chicago boys, looking up from their experiment so excited and saying, this is what we learned. But of course, the person down there in the petri dish being experimented on is only ever going to answer, this is what we lived. A lot of people to thank in this episode. Carol LaFuentes, the filmmaker who you've heard in these episodes, made an extraordinary documentary called The Chicago Boys. She basically talked to all of them. If you liked these episodes, you will love her movie. We'd also like to thank Dr. Ricardo French Davis, Dr. Sebastian Edwards, Alfredo Sepulveda, Francisco Aravena, Peter Kornbluh, Miguel Paz, and Juan Pablo Garnham. Nick Fountain produced these two episodes with some help from our intern, Rachel Cohn. Alex Goldmark is our supervising senior producer, and Bryant Erstadt is our editor. I'm Noelle King.
And I'm Jasmine Garst.
And this is a song by Victor Jara. It's called La Partida.